What is this place where we are meeting? Only a house, the earth, its floor, walls and a roof sheltering people, windows for light, an open door. Yet it becomes a body that lives when we are gathered here and know our God is near. Words from afar, stars that are falling, sparks that are sown in us like seed. Names for our God, dreams, signs and wonders sent from the past are all we need. We in this place remember and speak again what we have heard, God's free redeeming word. And we accept bread at his table, broken and shed a living sign. Here in this world, dying and living, we are each other's bread and wine. This is the place where we can receive what we need to increase our justice and God's peace.
Have you ever protested? The first protest I joined was a really peaceful protest. It almost felt like I was on a holiday. My friends and I drove up to Newcastle to join in a protest that was focused on climate change. And in particular, it was calling for a reduction in the amount of coal that was being exported out of Newcastle to other nations. And so to make this point, the protesters blockaded the harbour for the day. There was free kayaks available so you could go onto the water and stop the coal ships from entering. But because this protest was planned, no coal ships entered, and so we basically had this beautiful sunny day kayaking on the harbour. It was a very peaceful protest. But not all protests are that peaceful, are they? There has been a whole range of protests happening in our world recently, and it feels like Christians are often at the center of them. There was protests in Hong Kong as China started to exert its power and wanted to introduce laws that would allow it to intervene in Hong Kong and shut down any acts that it considered a national security risk. Citizens of Hong Kong took to the streets protesting. With them were Christians, and they were really obvious because the Christians, when they marched, sang hymns declaring that God reigns. It was a powerful moment. But those protests weren't completely peaceful. Violence happened. We've seen, as we begin a new year, Christians marching in Washington alongside others, calling on God to save the Republic, believing that Trump should be president and has been wronged in some way. Those protests turned violent, became this riot and an insurrection. Very uncomfortable to watch. Black Lives Movement had massive protests last year, including in Australia, which saw tens of thousands of people marching in Sydney, highlighting Aboriginal deaths that happen in custody and calling for change. Now, they were mostly peaceful, but there was some controversy about holding a protest in the middle of a pandemic, and there was a few skirmishes with police towards the end. We have Me Too marches, the Extinction Rebellion. We have people protesting about the lockdown, about wearing masks. Like, across the spectrum, there is a lot of anger. People see injustice and they take to the streets calling for change. And one of the things that all these movements need to wrestle with, whether on the right or the left, is what are we willing to do to see that change happen? Is violence ever okay? One of the reasons why I find the Book of Judges so helpful is because I feel like it deals with reality, even the uncomfortable parts of reality. It forces us to confront just how fascinated and repulsed we are with violence, how we often feel this pull to use violence to achieve our aims. Judges 3 begins by reiterating what has already been said in Judges 1 to 2, that Israel is living in the land of Canaan and is surrounded by all these nations, and they're kind of all squashing together, squabbling over this land, and those squabbles often become violent. This is the Bronze Age. It is a chaotic transitional time. There's mass migration happening, and war is considered a part of life. Like, you can't imagine there never being any war. And so it's assumed that if you want to survive, you need to know how to engage in war.
Judges 3, verse 1. These are the nations Yahweh left to test all those Israelites who had not experienced any of the wars in Canaan. He did this only to teach warfare to the descendants of the Israelites who had not had previous battle experience.
In the world of Judges, using violent means is considered normal and okay. You don't peacefully protest. If a nation is encroaching on you, if you believe that there is injustice that is happening, you go to war. In fact, it's kind of believed that it's on the battlefield that justice is kind of worked out. Israel has won a few battles, and they think that they have acted justly, that they have cleared out people who were sinning, and now they get to occupy this land. Now, they're not the only ones who are trying to occupy this land. We also have the Philistines coming in from the north, the sea people. As I said, this is a time of mass migration, and there are all these little nations in the land of Canaan, like the Canaanites or Moab or the Sidonians, the Hivites, and they all think that they should have this land. There's this Dutch secular philosopher named Brueghel, who's written this really provocative book which I read last year that argues that people are fundamentally good. That's the provocative statement. He says, we are social beings. We have this great capacity for empathy. We often do things that are unselfish. And yet, we also see violence and conflict. But his theory, and it's kind of this interesting theory, is that there was a massive shift in the Middle East when the climate started to grow warmer and people stopped being nomadic hunter-gatherers and started to settle in one place. He said, when we did that, that's when conflict escalated, because suddenly you have this idea that you can own land, that you can own stuff, that maybe you can even own people. And it doesn't take long for some people to amass more land, more stuff than others. And once you have stuff, once you have land, you want to defend it. And so you form alliances with other people groups to defend what you think is yours. We have conflict and injustice. And who do you need? You need military leaders. It's those who are good at fighting who end up being rewarded and given power. Brueghel says this is the curse of civilization.
The outbreak of these first clashes signaled the start of the great race that would shape world history. Villages were conquered by towns, towns were annexed by cities, and cities were swallowed up by provinces. As societies all frantically scaled up to meet the inexorable demands of war.
Nations think that violence is needed to protect what's theirs. Not just in the Bronze Age, we still think that now. Think about the nation of Australia. What violent means do we use to achieve our aims? And is it okay? What do you long to see changed in Australia? And what would you do to see that change happen? I hope you realize that these are really big ethical questions, and it's not as simple as you might think. Is violence ever okay? Well, people have been trying to work that out for quite a long time. And what further complicates things for us is that the writer of the Book of Judges brings God into it. The writer brings a theological explanation as he tries to explain what is happening both in the turbulent time that we're looking at, but also more broadly trying to make sense of Israel's history. The Book of Judges sits in the wider story of Israel and what God is doing in Israel.
Judges 3, verse 4, the nations are there to test the Israelites to see whether they would obey Yahweh's commands, which he had given their ancestors through Moses.
Israel is meant to be different. They are meant to worship Yahweh, love God. They're meant to be a people who practice justice and love of neighbor. But they don't. In fact, they get bored with Yahweh and instead are really fascinated with the nations. They want to be like the other nations. And so they start to intermarry with them. Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it leads them to incorporating the nation's gods into their own worship. And so they start to worship the Baals and the Asherahs. They break the covenant that they have made with God. They break God's commands. They do evil in God's sight. They let go of justice and love of neighbor. And God gets angry. So in Judges 3, God hands them over to the king of Aram. This is seen as an act of justice. And I think it's seen that maybe if they suffer, this experience will change them, will help them realize afresh who God is and the mercy and grace that they had. And to an extent it works. Israel does cry out to Yahweh and Yahweh responds. Yahweh shows grace. Yahweh raises up often one of the first judges and often goes out into battle, defeats Israel's enemies, and then there's peace in the land for 40 years. This raises maybe some uncomfortable questions for us because it kind of raises the question, does God use violent means to achieve his aims and is that okay? Now, we have to recognize that those type of questions are not ones that the original readers of the Book of Judges would have been asking. It was assumed that when you went to war, it was kind of almost like a battle between the different gods. And whoever won the battle was the more powerful god. And so that's what Israel would have assumed. I guess you see a hint of that here when we read that the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Othniel and the Spirit of God helps him win the battle. We see God's power. The big question Israel had, and it's kind of the big question, especially after their exile, was what happens when you lose? Does that mean Yahweh isn't actually that powerful? Israel only had a few times when they won. Most of the time, they lost. And so they had to really wrestle with what they thought about God and what God was doing. And they came to this intriguing answer. They came to believe that Yahweh was powerful, and when they were defeated, it didn't mean that God wasn't any less powerful, but in fact Yahweh allowed them to be defeated because they had sinned. Because they'd broken the covenant. Now this strangely comforted them, because even when times are hard, even when they experienced times of suffering, they held on to this hope that if they repented, if they turned back to God, then God would show mercy and deliver them. And this hope sustained them through some pretty dark periods in their history. So when they thought about violence, they associated it with God's justice and they associated it with sin. So if they sinned less, if they were able to obey God's commands, then they wouldn't suffer. But the tendency, which we definitely see in the Book of Judges, is for them to sin, to turn away from God. And so we see this violence spiral almost out of control. I wonder how that theological explanation sits with you. I wonder how you feel about the idea of God bringing suffering into our lives, maybe to change or refine us in some way. It also raises questions about justice and punishment. And again, this is kind of a big area, but when we think about justice, is punishment necessary as part of justice? Once again, these are not simple questions. The second story in Judges 3 follows this established pattern. There's peace in the land, and then Israel does evil in God's sight. And God acts this time by letting King Eglon, the king of Moab, rule over them. He rules over them for 18 years. Israel cries out to God, and then God raises up a deliverer, Ehud, a left-handed man from the tribe of Benjamin. Ehud is given the responsibility of carrying Israel's tribute to King Eglon. So to prepare, he sneaks in his double-edged sword, he straps it onto his thigh, hides it underneath his clothes, and then carries this tribute to the king. The king is described as being a fat man. And this reminds us that King Eglon, like so many kings, prosper on the back of others. This is someone who accumulates by taking from other people. This is a king that is unjust. And Ehud hands over the tribute to the king, and then he says, oh, I have a secret message for you. Now, there hasn't been that much of a security check, but the promise of a secret message gets the room cleared. King Eglon says, okay, everyone just leave us alone so I can hear this secret message. And Ehud says, yeah, like it's a really important message, message from God. And the king's like, well, what is it? And then Ehud leans in closer, gets closer to the king, like he's about to whisper the message, uses his left hand to grab the knife that is hidden and stabs it into the king's belly. And it's meant to be a really funny moment. This is a dark comedy here. It's meant to be really satisfying as we see this fat king who's taken all of Israel's crops die. And so we get this deep description of it.
Even the handle sank in after the blade and his bowels discharged. Ehud did not pull the sword out and the fat closed in over it. Then Ehud went out to the porch, he shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them.
Ehud manages to escape because the servants think that King Eglon is on the toilet and so they don't want to disturb him. Maybe this is something that happens a lot. And so again, it's kind of this funny moment that allows Ehud to flee to safety. Is violence ever necessary? No, we want to say. That's why we're outraged that it's in our Bibles. But I am fascinated by the book of Judges. I'm fascinated and repulsed because it confronts me. What would I do? What would I do if someone I loved was attacked? Would I attack back? Probably. I probably wouldn't be very good at it, but I might try. What would I do if someone was in power that did evil? Like, wouldn't I be satisfied if they were defeated? I would be cheering for King Eglon's death as well. What would I do to remove someone from power? What lengths would I go to? These are really hard ethical questions. The German Lutheran pastor and theologian Bonhoeffer wrestled with exactly this. Now, in his early 20s, he'd come to take a non-violent ethic based on Jesus' teachings. But that was put to the test as he saw the rise of Hitler and the Nazi regime. Bonhoeffer was one of the few Christians to, right from the beginning, speak out against this regime, and he called on the German churches to do likewise, but most did not. Bonhoeffer then made kind of this extraordinary decision to go back into Germany. He could have like lived in America and waited out the war and then come back in, but he decided it was really important for him to be there if he wanted to be involved in the restoration project after Hitler was defeated, which he thought would happen. So he went back to Germany, and this decision cost him. He saw and experienced the terrible power of Hitler. And he was invited to join a resistance movement that had plans to assassinate Hitler. Now, there's a lot of debate about how involved Bonhoeffer was and how he would have squared this with his non-violent ethic. But for me, it just highlights just how much of a wrestle these questions can be and how complicated they can be. Bonhoeffer was arrested and put into prison for helping Jews flee Germany. And in 1945, just as the war was about to end, at the age of 39, he and six others were executed, declared enemies of the state. Bonhoeffer's nonviolent ethic came from Jesus, and it was tested. Bergman, the Dutch scholar I quoted before, when he looks at a more hopeful vision for humanity, where does he turn? Ironically, even as an atheist, he turns to Jesus and Jesus' teachings. We are outraged and disturbed by the violent stories in the book of Judges because of Jesus. But I think we have these stories first because that's where most of us start. Actually, most of us don't have Jesus's strong non-violent ethic. Most of us have violent tendencies. Even me, you know, I get really angry sometimes and I think some terrible violent thoughts. And I watch a lot of violent TV shows and I sometimes love it when villains are gruesomely defeated. I find it satisfying, I'm like, yeah, just kill them all. And I long for oppressive regimes to be toppled. I long for God to act, and if there's a little bit of destruction, that's okay. And I think part of that is our longing for justice. And I think the book of Judges recognizes this, and I think this is the starting point that most of us take. And then God kind of pushes us to mature and grow beyond that, to live a different way. So when we come to Jesus, we see Jesus die a violent death, and in his death we see justice and grace come together in a really powerful way that kind of upends everything, changes everything, the way that we live, and suddenly the teachings of Jesus become possible. Jesus called us to love our enemies and to love the stranger, and to put not our family or our nation first, but to put others first, and that is not easy. I think we can see when we look at how Christians act in the recent protests around the world, it's not easy to practice a non-violent ethic. And so when Christians are asked, is violence ever okay? We should be leaning towards saying no, but I think we also need to acknowledge, you know, this is not easy. It is a struggle. It's an ongoing struggle I have in here trying to work out what does it mean to live this way in a world that is so violent and where it feels like violence is often rewarded. What does it look like to live a countercultural way? I can't do it by myself. I need the Spirit of God. And so we ask God to transform us. As we come to communion this morning, communion is a time when we are invited, before we share and celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus, communion invites us to examine ourselves. And I think this is so important. I think Christians need to be quick to examine ourselves, quick to repent, quick to humble ourselves and say, we are wrestling with trying to live a different way. God, please help us to do this. So before you come to communion, let's take a moment to just stop and think, what do I need to repent of? What do I need help changing in my life?